Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio. Secularism is growing all over the world, and in the U.S. there is an increasing resistance to Christian nationalism. FFRF attorneys Sammy Lawrence and Chris Line report some recent victories keeping state and church separate.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. While some of the world's poorest countries and communities welcome refugees with great hospitality, the international community must match their generosity with far greater solidarity, UN Chief Antonio Guterres said on Friday. Speaking at the closing of the Global Refugee Forum, Mr. Guterres said that protection and help for these most vulnerable of people was an obligation shared by all of humanity. He stressed that resources to support them are under enormous strain, especially in the Global South, which bears a disproportionate burden in hosting refugees. At the forum, co-hosted in Geneva by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and Switzerland, the UN Secretary-General welcomed the pledges and commitments made by countries and the private sector. These will help refugees rebuild their lives by improving access to education, healthcare, social protection, housing, employment, and participation in public life. In his video remarks, Mr. Guterres also highlighted the need to tackle the root causes of displacement in line with the 2018 Global Compact for Refugees, including the devastating impacts of climate change, poverty, and conflict. Protection needs for children in emergencies from Ukraine to Gaza and Sudan have never been greater, but the humanitarian funding forecast for 2024 is increasingly bleak. That's the message from the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, whose Deputy Executive Director for Humanitarian Action and Supply Operations, Ted Chaban, said that flexible funding for aid is shrinking. At the same time, attacks against humanitarian actors around the world have surged. Children should not be paying the price of our inaction with their lives and their futures, Mr. Chaban said, stressing that youngsters need continued access to essential services, including healthcare, safe water, basic sanitation, and education. Earlier this week, UNICEF launched a $9.3 billion emergency funding appeal to reach close to 94 million children in 155 countries in 2024. Mr. Chaban said that this year's ask was only about 50% met and listed a number of critically underfunded emergencies. These include Sudan, Burkina Faso, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, Myanmar, Haiti, Ethiopia, Yemen, Somalia, South Sudan, and Bangladesh. A lack of resources means that choices will need to be made regarding a number of essential interventions, including immunization, primary health care, treatment against severe acute malnutrition, psychosocial support, addressing grave violations against children such as recruitment by armed groups, and education, which is also a life-saving intervention in emergencies, according to UNICEF. A deadly mpox outbreak in the DRC has been rapidly spreading across the country, raising concerns of international transmission, the UN Health Agency, WHO, said on Friday. Over 13,000 cases have been reported through mid-November, with over 600 deaths, including in three provinces not previously affected, WHO said. The UN Health Agency reported that the strain of the virus responsible for the current DRC outbreak, called Clade 1, is more virulent than the predominant strain in the 2022 global outbreak, Clade 2. The DRC outbreak outpaces the global mpox case fatality ratio fourfold, and up to nine times in endemic areas. Human-to-human transmission in areas in which mpox is endemic is accelerating, and 70% of cases there are in children under 15. Concerningly, the DRC outbreak has seen the first reported sexual transmission of clade 1 mpox, and WHO warned that it is now moving through sexual networks that include male and female sex workers and their clients in areas with high population mobility. The crisis is further compounded by the fact that the DRC is simultaneously facing a cholera outbreak and a protracted humanitarian emergency driven by armed violence and mass displacement. WHO has been supporting the DRC Ministry of Health with the detection and confirmation of cases, as well as ramping up treatment. The country does not yet have access to mpox vaccines, and work is being done with the health authorities to develop an immunization strategy and help move towards vaccine approval, WHO said. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you wish to survive, you need to cultivate a strong mental attitude.
You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to...
Radio Free Kansas.
You have to let it all go. Fear, doubt, and disbelief. Free your mind.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County.
There have been so many technical difficulties beginning Friday with the BTR network. I was oh boy, it can overwhelm you when you worry about technology because there's so many variabilities and things of what could go wrong in being connected. Being connected, especially when it's multiple connections. Through different networks, it gets very hairy. I don't even know if you're hearing me right now, but I think you are. I'm going to run a test behind the scenes in the so-called green room. But, I mean, I'm telling you, technology, especially as sophisticated as this stuff is, they could get way, 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 way out. It could drive a person crazy. And beginning Friday, the network put out a notice saying that, you know, we're having connectivity and live show problems. So I just canceled Free Thought Friday. And I thought, I don't even want to get in this, you know, because I've been here since 2007. I learned some 4,147 shows. That's what that is. That's what we've done here. You and I. That's amazing. 4,147 shows since August of 2007. For me, that's like, well, you can ask my wife. I mean, it's like I've never been that reliable about anything. I was very reluctant. I was going to have to call John Grant for This Can't Be Happening Tuesdays and let him know, hey, man, looks like we've been wiped off the face of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Yeah, something's wrong. Don't let it get to you, really. I've got an interview here to play from the UN. We'll get to the Free Thought Radio show here in a little bit, but I want to play this interview. It pertains to all these horrible crises we're having around the world. It's very important. I think that we keep our ears to the ground and listen to what's going on in distant lands.
I mean, first of all, it's an unmitigated tragedy what is happening in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, but also in Israel, because it affects at the end of the day all communities. And of course, what's happening in Gaza is beyond devastating. I'm outraged also that so many of our colleagues have been killed, 134 from UNRWA, one from WHO, that our humanitarian system is not respected, that we are not able to provide what we would normally be able to do in a situation of war, and that human rights and international humanitarian law are violated on a daily basis in the most gravest of forms. And it is absolutely critical that accountability is part of any future arrangement, because we know that if impunity reigns and if the facts are not told and if truth is not told, we will have grievances going on and on and on. So I hope that with the work that we are doing from the human rights side, but also that the International Criminal Court is doing, that the different mechanisms are doing, that this is actually going to help us overcome some of the accountability issues that we face in this situation.
So what next steps do you envision, and what do you say to those who are flagging possible signs of genocide?
So we are going to continue documenting, reporting, monitoring the situation. I'm very worried about the risk of atrocity crimes. I'm very worried about the situation in the West Bank in particular, because what we see is since the 7th of October, over some 271 Palestinians have been killed, including 69 children. I'm worried about what this means in the future. I'm also extremely, extremely shocked by the dehumanizing language that I have seen, both from Hamas, but also from Israeli military and political leaders. Some of them have made comments that are utterly unacceptable and that worry us a lot.
If we turn now to Ukraine, in the Ukraine conflict, you've denounced the shockingly routine, grave human rights abuses committed by the Russian forces to little or no practical effect. And there are several human rights mechanisms that are monitoring violations and publishing reports regularly. How do you keep the spotlight on another horrific war, one that's been grinding on for almost 2 years now?
Yeah. So immediately when I go back to Geneva next week, I have to address the Human Rights Council and provide them an update on the human rights situation in the Ukraine. And as you know, during winter, the situation is even worse because some of the communities, especially near the front lines, have not been able to get access to electricity again. We have the ongoing killings. We have serious human rights violations, in particular torture, that's happening whenever the Russian forces are able to occupy territory. And yes, we just need to make sure that, again, accountability is going to be served. And again, we have a number of mechanisms similar to what we see in the Middle East, accountability mechanisms that are being used at the moment, and I just hope that they will actually serve justice. Mm. This is in the interest of all the victims.
So the key is always accountability.
The key is accountability, because it's been the missing link in most conflict situations around the world, and if you don't address accountability, you will end up again in war and conflict.
So then you would say that there is hope of ensuring due process in a war like Ukraine?
First of all, the question is when that can be done. But we have seen in so many other situations, if you look just at Bosnia and the wars in former Yugoslavia, but also Rwanda and other situations, you actually see people getting caught, even today. I mean, we still have national jurisdictions, universal jurisdictions that apply. And you can never, once you have committed this type of crimes, you can never be sure that at some stage you may not be caught. So I believe in this accountability mechanism. We did not have it 75 years ago. I mean, we had it in the wake of the Second World War. And that system that was established with the Nuremberg trials has helped us a lot to actually build up a system of accountability. I know it's not quick enough. I know we should have it everywhere and with the same intensity. But it is the beginning of something that is incredibly important.
And it's a process that you expect to build up over time as a deterrent?
I think we have seen it to be a deterrent. We need to make the price of non-compliance much higher. And that's why you need accountability as part of it. It's part of the prevention as well.
Okay. So you're the High Commissioner in the 75th anniversary year of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and you've reflected at length about the state of the world and what humans do to each other and to the planet, and you've called on it for it to change urgently. What do you say to those who have lost faith in human rights and that say that they only apply to some and not others, or that they're slow?
Yeah. Well, within the UN, within the United Nations, we were born out of cataclysmic events, two world wars, Holocaust, the nuclear threat, massive displacement. You had in Europe alone 60 million displaced. You know, when we talk about figures today, you can see what it was then. Out of this came the Charter of the UN and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and it was done against the backdrop of a horrific period in human history, and it was done precisely with this feeling of never again, And that's what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights has given birth to. And we have seen over the last 75 years, we don't talk enough about the achievements, we have seen massive achievements on the human rights front. I mean, if you look at it from a historical perspective, of course, there are also failures. But the failures are not the human rights system itself, it's the failures of implementation. And that brings us back to what member states and their obligations are, but also increasingly businesses, private sector, and non-state actors more generally. And that's where we need to also put the emphasis on.
How do you intend to have human rights taken more seriously? And can you give some of those, you've mentioned examples of how they work or examples and solutions of best practices on the ground?
I've just come from Geneva. We had a two-day high-level event on the occasion of to commemorate the 75 years of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And it is a minor miracle that against the backdrop of polarization and geopolitical tensions, we got over 155 countries to make concrete pledges that actually are going to be transformative. For example, five countries were pledging that they are going to abolish the death penalty. We have 54 countries who had very concrete suggestions on how to improve on gender equality, on protection of women. Number of countries who are 14 or so who are going to establish national human rights institutions. We have countries that are going to adopt legislation to protect people with disabilities. We have a number of countries who were talking about doing more on accountability issues. And transitional justice issues. So that actually gives me hope. With all the negative news that we have, we do see progress. We had, over the last 3 years, seven countries that decriminalized same-sex relationships, for example. We have two that unfortunately went the other way, but we have seven that decriminalized. So there is progress. We just have to be, we must never give up, and we have to persevere with our work.
You mentioned gender and you mentioned women's rights. And if we see from the Taliban to the rolling back of reproductive rights in some of the most so-called developed nations, how do you interpret the curtailing of women's rights around the world right now?
So we have seen a very worrying pushback on gender rights and on gender rights and women rights more generally. But let's also not forget where we have come from. And it's important to bear this in mind. What shocks me today is that things that I would have thought that they wouldn't be an issue anymore, like sexual and reproductive health rights, for example, or just basic equality issues, that they would now become a question of debate. And I just hope it's an aberration that quickly goes away, that's why we need to fight for it, because we can never take anything for granted. That's one of the lessons learned from human rights. I think each and every generation has to re-own it, recommit to it, and find a way to push back against influencers who often have misogynistic attitudes and sexist attitudes and patriarchal attitudes that, frankly, shouldn't have a place in the 21st century.
And entire state regimes who also...
And in particular, if you look at Afghanistan... Where you have basically a de facto authority that essentially, systematically persecutes women because of girls because of who they are. I mean, that is pretty much unheard of in the 21st century. And we really need to find ways and means to stop this. But it's not just there. We have also very serious issues in Yemen. We have it in PNG, Papua New Guinea, for example. Iran and a few other places where indeed you have such systematic discrimination against women.
There's a plethora of country-level elections planned around the globe next year, and we're seeing a massive erosion of in principles of democracy and tolerance, polarization, and meanwhile we're also witnessing a rise in well-orchestrated disinformation campaigns. Yeah. And a crackdown on even peaceful demonstrations. Can you tell us what your office does to support free, fair, and transparent elections?
It is a great worry for us to see that we have over 70 elections taking place with 4 billion people electing their new leadership, and at the same time social media platforms that often perpetuate harmful disinformation, even incitement to violence and hatred. And for us, it's therefore, and it's for the UN more generally, not just for my office, for us in the UN, extremely important to detect early warning signals quickly and to act on it and to counter it, to then be in touch with tech companies who run social media platforms so that they actually do content moderation, for example, and that we counter through campaigns about the harmful effect that hate speech has or disinformation has on electoral processes.
So you mentioned hate speech and hate. What do you say? We see an increased polarization, we see conflicts, we see the rise of anti-Semitism, of Islamophobia. What do you say, for example, to those who, before the conflict that we see with Israel and Palestine, are feeling hatred rise within them?
Yeah, I mean, hatred is one of those emotions that are extremely negative and unfortunately it sells well. And there is sometimes business interests that drive hatred. And we need to cut down on that, actually. We need to call it out. We need to show these business models. And we also need to find ways and means, again, to bring humanity back to its core and to its fundamentals. And I wish the peace, I mean, the messages of peace, of healing, of actually transforming hatred into positive actions would gain more traction, both in media, but also in the discussions. We hardly have a discussion about peace anymore, which is rather striking, or about human rights as a transformative vehicle for a better world. And I wish we would have more of this.
We've mentioned the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration several times. We're coming on to the end of a year's and 2 weeks of multiple events marking this anniversary. How do you feel coming out? What's come out of these events?
I mean, we have, as I mentioned before, we have these incredible pledges. We have, I do feel, and it's sometimes difficult to communicate about it because we are in such a dire, somber moment in our history, but there is a groundswell of support for human rights. And I see it among member states, I see it in the private sector, and above all, among young people. I mean, for young people, we know from different opinion polls that climate change and human rights issues are at the top of their agenda. We had a youth advisory group. We had hundreds of thousands of young people also participate in different events because of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And I can tell you, I mean, they know what it means to speak and to feel human rights. And that actually gives me a lot of hope. So I see this positive force that can help us, you know, put human rights back at the core of what we are all about.
So despite the current state of world affairs, you feel hopeful coming out of this?
I mean, we can never give up hope and we can never give up our work. And I think within the tragedies of today, we can also see what the elements are that actually get us out of this, away from this precipice and let us be hopeful for a future that is more peaceful and also more embracing of the other.
Wow. Well, you know, that's from the United Nations. Some dignitary within the organization. Oh, boy. Declaration of Human Rights. I'll be back with you on the far end. There'll be a few minutes left for me to talk. In the meantime, here's Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Radio for the Rest of Us. You can turn on the radio almost any time of day and hear religious broadcasting, but how often do you hear a show specifically for the non-religious? I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie Gaylor is not with me today. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we just got back from Europe earlier this week, where we participated in an international conference of secular groups, and I'll tell you more about that in a moment. I had a slight head cold during the trip, but when we got home Monday, Annie Laurie took it from me. Hers seems to be a lot worse, so she has to take off a couple of days of sick days. This is the December 14th, 2023 episode of Free Thought Radio. Tori Niels is engineering today. Tori is with the recording studio called Audio for the Arts, and she's in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. And this show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which has two purposes: to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-theists, that's atheists or agnostics or secular humanists. Since we live in a country with religious freedom, we think there should be room at the inn for non-believers as well. We invite you to become a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can join us by going to our website at ffrf.org. Or if you want to talk to someone on the phone, call 1-800-335-4021, where you can ask for a sample issue of our monthly newspaper, Free Thought Today. While Annie Laurie and I were traveling, FFRF's legal staff has been very busy. In fact, in the past month or two, FFRF's litigation team has finalized victories in three major legal cases. But we also solve many state church problems without going to court, and that's through writing letters of complaint to public officials who violate the law. Today, in the second half of the show, I'm going to talk with two of our nine full-time attorneys, Sammy Lawrence and Chris Lyne, and they're going to tell us about those recent legal victories and complaints. December festivities are upon us, and most of those festivities are fun. But December is not just for Christmas. In fact, tomorrow is the anniversary of the birth of the U.S. Bill of Rights. It was ratified on December 15, 1791. The Bill of Rights begins with the First Amendment, which reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." I think we can say, regardless of what you think about the birth of a possible savior, we can say that the Bill of Rights has been a true savior, saving us from centuries of religious divisiveness and governmental intrusion into private matters of conscience. So in December, many of us celebrate the birth of the Bill of Rights. And last week, our annual Bill of Rights display went up once again in the Wisconsin State Capitol, along with our traditional winter solstice sign, urging that reason should prevail. And similar displays have gone up in Iowa and Milwaukee in Daly Square in Chicago, and many more will be going up around the nation. And of course, next week on December 21st, we will celebrate the birth of the sun, that's S-U-N, not S-O-N, on the astronomical event known as the winter solstice, which is the real reason for the season. Speaking of anniversaries, this Saturday is the anniversary of Beethoven's birth. He was born December 16th, 1770. He was born into a Catholic family, but there's no record that Beethoven ever went to church or confession or observed any of the orthodoxy of his family's religion. He was an admirer of Goethe, who rejected Christianity. One biographer described Beethoven as a freethinker and said that he generally viewed priests with mistrust. We'll hear some of Beethoven's music today, including the Quartet No. 9 in C major, Ode to Joy, and Piano Concerto No. 5. You can find out more about Beethoven's irreverent views, as well as many other famous freethinkers, by visiting our website called Free Thought of the Day, where every single day there's a different quote or anniversary or birth of a freethinking person. And if you want, you can sign up to receive daily emails in your morning email inbox. So, just today, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has an ad running in the New York Times. A full-page ad, beautifully laid out with a bunch of stars in the background. And let me just read what the ad says. At this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is working for a world in which people are more important than dogma. Religions that teach hate, sexism, racism, trans and homophobia are not pandered to. War, violence, terror, and discrimination in the name of imaginary gods are no longer countenanced. Religion stays in its place as a matter of conscience, but out of our laws and social policy. Basing our convictions about religion on reason rather than faith, tradition, or authority, we believe that there is no God. There is no sin except ignorance and cruelty. There is no higher purpose except what we make for ourselves. There is no hell except what misguided humans make here on earth. There is no heaven except the paradise we could create here on earth. The only afterlife that should concern any of us is leaving our descendants and Earth, our pale blue dot, a secure and pleasant future. And thanks to the generous contributions from members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we are able to take out ads like that to educate the public about the views of those of us, the many tens of millions of Americans who do not follow any religion. Now, in other news, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is welcoming the Supreme Court review of the abortion drug ruling. We are hopeful that the court's announcement yesterday that it will hear an appeal over restrictions on medication abortion means that the high court may be poised to reverse an unfavorable lower court ruling. They didn't have to take this case. The Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this summer had upheld an injunction restricting mifepristone, part of a drug protocol for medication abortion. The appeals court ruling limited abortion medication to just 7 weeks of gestation and also banned telemedicine and mail order shipments for abortion pills. Mifepristone was first approved by the FDA in 2000, and now abortion medication amounts for more than half of all abortions. The ruling so far has had a limited impact because the Supreme Court put the ruling on hold until this litigation is resolved. The decision by the appeals court was appealed both by the drug manufacturer as well as the FDA in separate cases. The Justice Department argues that the appeals court ruling would disrupt the pharmaceutical industry and prevent the FDA from fulfilling its responsibilities according to its scientific judgment. The plaintiffs are represented by the Christian nationalist group Alliance Defending Freedom, who also worked to judge shop U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek. He's a Christian nationalist extremist who notoriously issued the April ruling to ban mifepristone nationwide. And our legal director, Rebecca Markert, points out this is a case where the plaintiffs have completely manufactured their standing to sue. It's an egregious abuse of the case or controversy requirements that the courts are supposed to enforce. So FFRF plans to file an amicus brief that focuses on these standing issues. Also, the claim that mifepristone is unsafe, should not be available, has no basis in fact. Medication abortion is extremely safe with a death rate of 0.005%. Annie Laurie Gaylor wrote in a press release that the court needs to right this wrong. So stay tuned for more news about our amicus brief in that case. Last year, Donald Trump invited Nick Fuentes to dine at Mar-a-Lago, and that prompted a huge outrage when it was revealed that Fuentes is a white supremacist, Christian nationalist, anti-LGBTQ, authoritarian extremist. And Nick Fuentes has a live stream show last Sunday on his show called The Great Replacement is About White Genocide. Nick Fuentes called for the death penalty for non-Christians. He said that when Donald Trump's America First movement takes power, all non-Christians will be executed.
So many of the people that are perpetrating the lies and the destruction on the country, they are evildoers. They are people that worship false gods. They are people that practice magic or rituals or whatever. And more than anything, those people need to be, when we take power, they need to be given the death penalty. These people that are suppressing the name Christ and suppressing Christianity, they must be absolutely annihilated when we take power. This is God's country. This is Jesus' country. This is not the domain of atheists or devil worshipers or perfidious Jews. This is Christ's country.
Wow. And what those comments translate to is that Nick Fuentes thinks I should be executed. I and tens of millions of good Americans who do not believe in his God. Don't those fascist comments echo what happened in Nazi Germany? It's not just in America where religious extremism is rearing its ugly head. Last week, Annie Laurie Gaylor and I were in Paris for that conference that I just mentioned, where Annie Laurie gave a panel talk about how secular groups around the world might unite our efforts. And in that conference, there was, well, I counted about 18 different countries who were there. There were about 40 different people. It took place December 8th and 9th at Paris City Hall. The Association Laïcs Sans Frontières, which means Seculars Without Borders, the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain were the co-organizers, and in collaboration and co-sponsorship with the Comité Laïcité République and the EGALI Association, which means Equality Secularism in Europe, in partnership with Charlie Hebdo. You know, Charlie Hebdo is the magazine where they had that those killings a few years ago over Muslim protests, the Marianne magazine, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, we were the only Americans present there, and the UK-based National Secular Society, and the Center for Inquiry, which is a US-headquartered organization. So more than 40 personalities from almost 20 countries, and the themes were the importance of laïcité. Laïcité is the French word or the French version of what we call secularism. It's slightly different, a bit stronger, I think, actually, especially laïcité for women's rights and also atheism in the Islamic context and the challenges linked to laïcité in preserving democracy. At the end of the conference, there was a document prepared, the Paris Appeal, that we all signed on to. And let me just read what that says. the Paris Appeal, because we refuse that religion dictates its laws to the city, the polis, P-O-L-I-S, and affirm that the separation of religions and the state protects the rights of all, regardless of their personal convictions, be they atheists, believers, or agnostics, because we reject all discrimination and racism in the name of our common humanity, because we fight obscurantism, fundamentalism, and communitarianism, because we consider that the right to be different should not lead to a difference in rights, because we strongly condemn any violence or constraint against the expression of free thought, because we demand access for all to knowledge and to rational and emancipatory education, because we are deeply attached to the values of freedom, equality, and justice, because we are for a world of peace where reason takes precedence over beliefs and which recognizes universalist and humanist principles, because laïcité cannot be confused with the secularization of societies, we demand the right to freedom of conscience. Gathered on December 9, 2023, the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the anniversary of the 1905 French law on the separation of church and state, we launch this Paris appeal calling on laïcs, which are secularists, laïcs of all countries to unite for the promotion of laïcité as a fundamental principle of democracy, pluralism, universal rights, and freedoms in all societies, the complete separation of religions and the state in political structures and systems, particularly in the law, the judicial system, education, health, and all public services, the abolition of restrictive religious and cultural laws in the civil, penal, and family code. We refuse all regulations and practices imposed on women which violate their dignity and deny them the right to bodily autonomy, the right to freedom of conscience and expression, including the right to change religion or to have none, and the suppression of the offenses of blasphemy and apostasy, equality between women and men, and citizenship rights for all, the defense of dissidents threatened by the state or society for their belief or convictions, the right of all to live and love according to their free choice. That was the Paris Declaration. Well, it was an invigorating opportunity for us to affirm our collective adherence to secularism and to freedom of conscience. So we're taking a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about free will and then about Rob Reiner's new documentary about Christian nationalism. Then I'll be joined by attorney Sammy Lawrence and Chris Lyne, who will tell us about some of the legal victories FFRF has seen in the past few weeks. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Don Ardell, a life member of FFRF and promoter of Real Wellness Lifestyles. I'm no longer willing to say, in God I trust, so help me God, God bless America, or pretend America is more under a God than any other nation. Join the resistance to Christian nationalism and politicians more attentive to what they think God wants than the needs of their constituents. Let's make separation of church and state a reality and turn back the drift to theocracy. Support FFRF. Our freedom really does depend on freethinkers.
And welcome back to Free Thought Radio. FFRF also has a TV show called Free Thought Matters. Our topic this week is, do we have free will? Annie Laurie and I talked with Stanford professor of biology, Robert Sapolsky, about his new book, Determined. I asked him how the free will question relates to religion. How do you think rejecting free will might affect the theological ideas of deserved salvation and divine punishment?
obviously different sorts of religions come up with different views about it, but what they often promulgate is an immediate panicked sort of response when saying there's no free will of, oh my God, so to speak, people are just going to run amok if they think there's no free will. We can't tell people that. People will fall into this Hobbesian, you know, murk of disinhibited sort of violence and selfishness and all of that. And whether or not there is free will, but we think there is, people really need to think there is, because otherwise people will run amok. Get somebody saying, I don't believe in free will. I haven't believed in it for years. And they are exactly as ethical in their behavior as in someone who believes passionately in free will, and we need to be held responsible. There's an interesting similarity there, parallelism, in terms of it being similar to the, oh my God, you don't believe in God. How can you possibly behave ethically? And then when you look closely, when you look at people who are stridently atheistic, they are exactly as ethical, if not more so, in their behavior than people who are stridently religious.
You can watch that episode with Robert Sapolsky on Free Thought Matters right now on our playlist on our FFRF YouTube channel, or check out our website for stations and times where it broadcasts in your area. Last week, we pre-recorded the show with clips from All in the Family by Norman Lear, with Rob Reiner playing the atheist son-in-law. We're sorry to learn about the death of Norman Lear last week. Quite a coincidence. Well, Rob Reiner has now produced a documentary about Christian nationalism. It's called God and Country. Let's listen to the trailer.
America and Christianity are like baseball and apple pie, and we celebrate them together.
I was 16, 17 years old when I became a Christian.
I'm an evangelical minister.
I've been a Christian my whole life.
I'm a Christian nationalist. I have nothing to be ashamed of, because that's what most Americans are.
Is Christian nationalism Christian?
No, it isn't.
We should be blazing forth as a countercultural example, and instead, we're leading the charge of malice and division.
Christian nationalism uses Christianity as a means to an end, that end being some form of authoritarianism.
Being a Christian is about the values of inclusion. Christian nationalism is certainly not based on the values of the gospel.
God wants America to be saved.
They're told over and over and over again that you're in danger.
You need to fight if you don't want to lose your country.
We are in a civil war between good and evil.
This is not a movement about Christian values. This is about Christian power.
What happens to the people who don't believe this stuff?
We are on the precipice.
God is on our side.
We're taking our nation back.
The thing that keeps me up at night is that we lose democracy.
Does that seem possible?
Yes.
Christianity at its best is committed to love and truth and justice. If we do this right, what a country we will be.
And that's the trailer. That's the trailer for the new documentary called God and Country, produced by Rob Reiner. Indeed, Christian nationalism is a threat to the values of diversity and democracy. Rob Reiner says, not since the Civil War has our country been so divided. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is continuing to do all we can to fight the dangers of Christian nationalism. We're going to take a break. After the break, FFRF attorney Sammy Lawrence and Chris Lyne will tell us how our legal and litigation staff have been racking up legal victories to keep state and church separate.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And Annie Laurie had to take a sick day today, but she'll be back next week. But I am joined in the studio today by two very capable people. Sammy Lawrence is a legal fellow here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation for what? How long now has it been? A couple of years?
Yeah, I interned here twice in law school, so it feels like it's been a long time.
Wow. Well, we keep seeing your name all over the press releases for all these complaints and victories you're getting. We're also joined by Chris Lyne, who is a staff attorney here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And how long ago was that? That was, what, 4 years or?
I've been a staff attorney for something like 4 years, but I also interned. And so, I'm coming on like 8 years maybe or something total here at FFRF.
And we also see your name, and we say your name a lot on this show, reporting legal victories. And Annie Laurie and I have been out of the country for the last few weeks, but we've been sort of half paying attention to a lot of things that have been happening, including three really significant court victories that have happened. But also at the letter writing level, you and the other staff are busy. Which one of you wants to explain in general what you do with those letters? You want to say, Sammy?
Sure. So basically we get a complaint about a state church violation somewhere in the country, and Chris and I are the two primary people right now who write letters to the government entity involved and try to address the state church violation quickly before having to go to court.
Which is nice, because going to court can be costly and time-consuming, and if you can stop it right at the source, that's just as an important a victory as if we went to the Supreme Court on something, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that our complainants are really appreciative when we can get things taken care of quickly and efficiently without a lawsuit that could take years to resolve.
Yeah. So you write a letter, remind them of the state of the law, why what they're doing is wrong, and they don't always comply, do they? But when they do, tell us about a victory in South Dakota that you had something to do with.
Well, we recently got a complaint from a parent or a school employee in South Dakota who stated that they had a Veterans Day assembly for the entire school district, and they invited a clergy member to open and close the ceremony with Christian prayers. So I wrote a letter to the superintendent basically explaining why that's just clearly unconstitutional, and thankfully the superintendent wrote back and chose to do the right thing and said that they're working on policies to prevent this from happening again and that the district will comply with the Constitution going forward.
So they didn't have a policy in place? Or?
That's what it sounds like. Unfortunately, in a lot of smaller towns, it seems like they've just been doing things this way forever. Like, we've always just been having preachers come to assemblies and have prayer, and no one said anything before. So we're always happy to be able to write to these smaller school districts and remind them of what the law is.
I remember a few years ago, a superintendent in a Tennessee or Mississippi school district said, you know, we've been doing these things. We kind of wondered if it was right or not, and we thought we'd just keep doing it till someone complains, and we complain, and then they stop, right? They were waiting for somebody to just let them know you can't do this. This was just in the high school, or was it at all grade levels?
I believe it was K through 12 students were all at this assembly.
Wow. And in your press release, I see the wording of this prayer. It's very Christian, right? We thank you for one nation under God, our principles in the Lord, and I pray for those. And then close it in Jesus' name. Yeah. So do you know, were the plaintiffs like non-Christian, or were they like a more minority religion? Or?
I believe that the complainants in this case did say that they are not personally religious.
Yeah. And they don't want their school pushing somebody else's religion on them. Well, congratulations. That's really, it must feel fun to get a response back, huh?
It does, especially when it's a nice response.
Yeah, South Dakota. So, Chris, you've had a slew of them here. Did you want to talk about California first?
Yeah. I don't exactly know how to say the district. It sounds like Castaic USD. So a parent actually reached out to us, letting us know that the middle school was holding a fundraiser for Three Angels Haiti. That's a Christian ministry.
Three Angels what?
Haiti.
Haiti.
The country.
Haiti.
Yeah, Angels Haiti. Our company reported the fundraiser was being organized and promoted by the administrators of the school and teachers, and that the administrators and staff had not informed students or parents that it was a Christian ministry and that the funds would not be used for a secular purpose, but actually to indoctrinate students into the Christian religion. Three Angels Haiti's mission is actually to help children in Haiti escape poverty so that they may experience God's love. They describe their goals as to help them escape poverty, encounter Jesus, and become part of a healthy home. Students at the Christian school there that this fundraiser would help support line up by class every school day and recite Psalm 23 and the Lord's Prayer before singing the national anthem and other worship songs before heading to the classrooms. So we wrote to the school district letting them know that organizing a fundraiser that for all intents and purposes employs school staff and resources to proselytize children in Haiti violates basic constitutional principles, and it's inappropriate for a public school teacher to use their authority to encourage students to donate to religious groups for religious purposes. We did, of course, note that it is laudable for a public school to promote student involvement in the community by volunteering and donating to charitable organizations, but the school can't use that goal as an avenue to fund a religious organization and to, you know, reach this religious purpose of you know, proselytizing to children and, you know, giving the children something good, but only in exchange that they convert to Christianity.
Well, are they giving them something good? How does Jesus reduce poverty?
Well, you know? I mean, there's a school there. I mean, I presume they're teaching secular subjects as well, but obviously the main focus is going to be religious for these schools. So, you know, we let them know certainly there's other secular nonprofits that they can, you know, offer charitable opportunities for.
So what happened?
So immediately, as soon as we sent the letter, we got an amazing response from the district, from the superintendent. The district said that the district has looked into our concerns and is going to take the following corrective action. They immediately ended the fundraising initiative for Three Angels Haiti. No further efforts will be made, and no further requests for donating to the charity will be made. Moreover, any funds collected are not going to be distributed to the organization. And the district is reminding its staff of the provisions of its education code and related board policies to that. It's also going to take steps to ensure moving forward fundraisers for district-wide fundraisers are approved by the administration in advance of any donations. And the district even thanked us for bringing this to attention and for our professionalism and cooperation. So Basically the best response we could get. I mean, some of these are hard. This one wasn't. This is very clearly a Christian ministry. But we do run into problems this time of year where, you know, there's groups that hide their religious affiliation. The Salvation Army, Operation Christmas Child comes up. That's to give gifts to students in Africa. But those gifts include proselytizing messages. So there's always kind of that catch in that thing. And so it can be hard to say, hey, school, you can't be raising money for people, you know, in Africa or for Haiti or other countries, you know, to help support them. But when that support also entails that they must submit to a certain religion as a requirement to get those gifts, you know, I think that's not appropriate just for a person to do, but certainly not appropriate for a public school to be raising funds for, and we're glad that the school district
Well, that's
the right
exactly
thing.
What some poor child in some country like in Africa would hope for when they open a Christmas gift to find a Bible there, right? Well, wow, this is really...
Yeah.
But so you said they had a policy in place. So do you think these are just like rogue teachers or rogue people in the administration that are just deciding individually to do these things?
Yep, I think there was one teacher who was sort of in charge of, you know, who had put forth the effort for it. And like I said, it makes sense. I mean, people, you know what I mean, they want to do good things. I mean, even, you know, these people, they want to help people, but they're just not doing it through the proper venues. You know, this is not something like this where it's a ministry is not an appropriate fundraiser for this time of year. I mean, it's great that they're raising funds, and, you know, hopefully they will switch to a secular group that's not going to, you know, that's going to help people without having that religious requirement, and hopefully the students, teachers, and everyone there can still raise funds and do something good.
And spend the funds on something other than Bibles.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Wow. Well, okay, well, congratulations. That's kind of nice. It's nice when they thank us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for informing us about this. Sammy, over to Kansas. What happened there?
So we recently got a complaint from a parent in Kansas that their child's choir teacher was teaching students just basically blatantly Christian worship songs. I believe the two songs that they mentioned were Praise His Holy Name and Didn't My Lord Deliver Daniel, which I don't have the lyrics in front of me, but if you Google them, they're just Christian worship songs. They're not particularly historical or have a secular purpose. They're just worship music. And additionally, the choir teacher had also taught students a lesson on the Bible story of Daniel from a devotional biblical perspective, which is also clearly problematic and a constitutional violation. So I wrote a letter to the superintendent, and thankfully they responded appropriately and said that they talked to the choir teacher about the situation and shared our letter with her, and that they will also be speaking to all of the other music teachers in the school district to inform them about what kind of behavior is constitutional and what is not allowed.
So maybe this teacher already had something of a reputation in school for pushing religion on students, huh?
I'm not sure, but I would hazard a guess that probably a lot of times teachers who do this sort of thing do it regularly, and eventually just a parent gets fed up and contacts us. I think it's kind of rare that teachers who are pushing their faith onto students only do it once. I think it's usually a pattern of behavior.
So we have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask about this music in schools in general. I mean, because it can be kind of a gray area thing, can it? So I'm Dan Barker, and I'm talking with attorney Chris Lyne and legal fellow Sammy Lawrence about some recent state church victories that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has had. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with more good news.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, and continuing our conversation with Chris Lyne, a staff attorney here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and legal fellow Sammy Lawrence. And before the break, Sammy, we were talking about religious music in the schools, and especially in December now when they're putting on these winter concerts. Let me ask you this. What if there's a 12 songs in some winter concert at a public high school, and one of them is a Christmas carol? Would we complain about that?
Probably not. Certainly schools can recognize that there are a lot of holidays going on this time of year, and as long as the Christmas concert is diverse, I think just one Christmas carol in a large concert would probably be fine.
Because it wouldn't look like they are actually making that religion special. It's just part of a bigger
Yeah, exactly.
So where would you draw the line? What if 60% of it was religious music? Would that be something to complain about?
If we're getting to the point where half or more than half of the songs are religious or probably specifically Christian, then we probably would write a letter and address that, because then it does seem like the school is really favoring one religion and one religion's holidays over others, and that becomes constitutionally problematic.
I have an atheist secular solstice song. Maybe we could send it to the school and ask them how diverse they really want to be, huh?
I think that would be fun.
It wouldn't happen, but I noticed in the past years that sometimes these high school choir directors or music directors are also the local church choir director as well, and so they sometimes hold their concerts in that church. That would be even worse, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would definitely be a problem. It's generally our stance that schools just shouldn't be having school-sponsored events in houses of worship at all. They shouldn't be forcing students to go and do a church or any house of worship in order to participate in a school activity.
Yeah, I've heard from Jewish students who refuse to go. And one of our friends played the clarinet in the high school band and said, I'm not going to go play in some church, you know. And then, so they didn't have to. They weren't allowed to participate in their own high school event. So, Chris, what else you got, Chris? Ohio
yeah.
or what?
Yeah, no, I got one we could talk about from South Carolina.
South Carolina.
As we know, I've been here for like 8 years, so it's hard for me to see anything new or for a new violation to come up. But this was sort of a unique take. This is a letter we had written about South Carolina State Representative Beach, Thomas Beach. So we've seen reps use unique ways to sort of push their religion. Maybe they include prayers at one of their events, or, you know, they're putting a Bible verse in their newsletter or something like that. But this this was a unique situation where a unique way for South Carolina State Rep Beach to use state resources to proselytize to his constituents. So we actually, one of his constituents contacted us to report that Beach had sent them a birthday card. But that birthday card included a message encouraging them to dedicate their life to Jesus and repent their sins.
Happy birthday.
Yeah,
you're going to hell.
Yeah, but here's what the card said. Another year of life upon this earth. I hope you have used it well and to the fullest. I do encourage you to dedicate your life to our Father in heaven. It was He who gave us life. It is up to us on what we do with it, and we will give an account for it. The world might be a chaotic, broken, and crazy, but I have found a simple solution. Repent of your sins and place your faith in Jesus. I pray the Lord places a hedge of protection around you and your family. Happy birthday. Sincerely, Representative Thomas Beach.
So that sent like an official from his office?
Yes. Yeah, through the office. This is a birthday message to a constituent that gets around to the end that it's a birthday message, but it's clearly meant as an excuse for this representative to be pushing his religion using his state office. Of course, we've demanded that he immediately ceased doing that. We haven't received a response yet or anything, but hopefully he'll get the message and stop this. Because it's just kind of, there's a lot of, like I said, ridiculous ways that representatives choose to use their position to try to push their religion. Oh, let's throw a prayer in here. Let's do this, trying to sneak religion in many ways. But to send a birthday card mostly talking about repenting to Jesus, it's just not, I don't think that he would be sending this birthday card just to say happy birthday. It clearly was an excuse to proselytize through the state office.
You know, when I was a preacher, I would have done something like that, thinking that it was a good, proper, right, beautiful, helpful thing to do to inform people of the truth, you know, and not even thinking about, well, am I mixing my government job with my personal religion? I would have just thought anyone would welcome that. Who would not want to hear the good news that you don't have to go to hell or that? But so it's letters like yours that have to inform them that
right.
There is a division here, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, obviously as I'm non-religious, I'm an atheist. And I just don't feel that compulsion, to do the opposite with atheism. You know what I mean? I very often don't bring it up. And I certainly, in the context of doing another position or talking about something, I would never feel the urge to, even if I knew someone was, say, a Christian, I would never feel the urge to decide to just, hey, by the way, let me let you know that God doesn't exist and that your religion is not true. So it's kind of unfair that, Christianity encourages, I'm sure his church encourages him to try to, you know, go out and spread the message of Jesus wherever he goes and through whatever medium he has. Whereas, obviously, as a non-religious person, one of the nice things is I have no, you know, I'm not being required to missionize and to spread atheism. You know, it's just my personal beliefs, and I don't have any
but
urge to
But if you
share
really
them.
Did believe in heaven and hell, and you really thought those were true things, then you could say that you're acting out of a compassionate motive to try to help others.
Yeah.
And not see where you're stepping over the line in your governmental office, right?
Exactly.
So are we expecting a response?
Unfortunately, with these type of people, the person who would do something like this, he's probably not going to respond. Hopefully, he stops. If he continues, if he does it in other ways, you know, obviously at some point, he maybe have some sort of legal liability, you know, if he really keeps at this and we can, you know, establish a pattern of him doing this. That's the type of thing we would need.
We could take some kind of action.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he'll send you a letter on your birthday.
Maybe it's next week, so I guess we'll find out.
That's cool. You got something else, Sammy, or in general about writing letters to...
Just in general, I would say please keep sending us complaints with all the information that you can and be specific, because we want to keep helping people and resolving these state church violations across the country, and we want to head into the new year starting strong.
How does somebody send us a complaint?
Well, you can go to our website, ffrf.org, and there you'll find a web form to fill out to report a state church violation, and that will go to our intake attorney, who will evaluate it and let us know if we can take action.
Well, so under our website, there's a legal drop-down, and then you can find report a violation?
Yep, correct.
How many of those come in, do you know, every week or month or so?
I know we receive over 1,000 a year. It varies week to week, but we receive very many, and we want to keep that up.
And can you estimate how many of those are successful?
Well, I know this year so far, I believe we've had over 100 confirmed victories, which is, I think, pretty good given the amount of letters that we send and that we take action on. And every victory matters, and I know that the people that we get victories for are often very thankful and happy that we've stepped in.
Yeah. And sometimes the local complainant wants to remain anonymous. Can they do that?
Yes, we keep everybody anonymous 100% of the time unless they explicitly tell us not to for some reason.
Well, thank you, Sammy, and thank you, Chris. Sammy Lawrence is a legal fellow at FFRF, and Chris Lyon is a staff attorney here. Thanks for all your hard work and for reporting this good news. There is good news in December that we can live in a country free from religious imposition. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Dan.
And that's our show. We want to thank listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM and Bryn Mawr to WZML. Here in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU. In Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR. In College Station, Texas, KEOS. San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. Columbia, Missouri, KOPN. Eugene, Oregon, KEPW. In Vermont, New Hampshire, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio. You guys have been listening for many years. WRIU in Kingston, Rhode Island. WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And if you listen to us on the podcast, please give us a thumbs up on the provider. Tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio. And you can find out more about FFRF at our website, ffrf.org. You can get a free sample of our monthly newspaper and help us in our efforts to keep religion and government separate. As Andy Laurie says every week, tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope so.